Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
All right.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And it's another edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge here. It's hot as hell in D.C., humid, going to rain later. Cicadas are driving me nuts. Y'all don't have cicadas out west.
Hold on. You're telling me even y'all sunny days are trash?
Dude, it's awful. In the summertime, it's just, they're great in the fall, but in the summertime, it's awful. It's humid and nasty and shit. Plus, we got cicadas just hovering over us like a UFO, just making noise and just literally dropping out of the sky on your head. That's what they do. They just come flying out of the sky. It's like a big insect. And every 17 years, they literally come out of the ground every 17 years. And for like 2 months, they just start procreating like crazy. And that's all they do for 8 weeks is go into trees and procreate with each other and die.
Hold
that's
on, what is they that do. Like them games we watch where like they're flying all over the baseball field? And
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Jarvis Chamberlain had them all in his face.
That's a midge.
It's a midge. Cicadas are loud, is what
cicadas
I remember.
Cicadas are beautiful. Beautiful insect.
I want to crush them, every one of them that I see.
Yeah, I was in Japan and I'd never heard anything like it in my life where you can't hear people. It's so loud. No. It's deafening.
It's like a UFO hovers, just whirring, hovering over you for all day. You can hear it when you're inside. You can hear it. That's how loud they are. It's crazy. I feel like Will Smith in Men in Black when he starts killing all the cockroaches at the end. Is that your auntie? That's what, that's what I feel like. It's terrible here. But out on the West Coast, the best coast, my man Marcus Thompson, and our guest this week, Ethan Strauss. Gentlemen, welcome back.
The only cicadas we have are at Mexican restaurants, baby.
I was scrambling for a joke as well.
You're that cicada sound like a Mexican. They're like, hold on, I want a cicada. Where I got them at?
Or a species in Star Trek. You could go a lot of directions with it, but that was the right way.
That sounds like a Mexican dish. When I saw it, cicada. And I was like, hey, you know what? That sounds like...
People eat cicadas. They do eat cicadas.
People actually eat them?
Oh, yeah.
People eat bugs, man.
It's a thing. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't. Not on a dare, but I'd squash them. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Step on them and just get it to it. Feel it good.
So. People like grasshoppers and crickets. You know what's good? I mean, I'm not really into that stuff, but ant eggs. Ant eggs are actually
ant
good.
Eggs?
So
ant
you're eggs. Not into grasshoppers and cicadas, no. But ant
that's
eggs.
Disgusting. Ant eggs.
You guys say
ant
it.
Eggs roll.
You guys say it, weird. I was in that's Mexico City, and it's a delicacy around the springtime. If you're ever around.
First off, that's hella eggs, right? Yeah. Like one ant egg, can you eat just one? Do you know you ate one?
Yeah, once you pop, you can't stop, you know?
How small is an ant egg? Maybe we all eat ant eggs.
No, they look like little pearls of rice almost. They're about that size. And if you're in southern Mexico around the springtime, you can get them at a bunch of different places. And everybody, I was at a table of people from the United States. We were there for a wedding. And everybody had the same reaction, which is, this is surprisingly good. I had no idea this would be good. So that's just a little tip. The others, you know, you can have them. I don't need them. I don't want to eat a bug. But ant eggs, for whatever reason, the caviar of the desert. I'm coining that right now. And maybe you could do a segue to the Phoenix Suns if you need to.
I'm a pass on the ant eggs, because one time, well, now I've been to Mexico twice. The second time I went, it didn't end well for the kid. That's all I'm saying. I remember it vividly. Because it was when Princess Diana died, and I know that because I spent 4 days in bed watching CNN during my vacation to Mexico City, and that's all I'm going to say on that.
Blowing out many candles in the wind of the restroom, too.
It was just not good. Actually, it wasn't Mexico City. Let me be accurate about that. It was Cancun.
Ah.
It was Cancun. Ah. And it still wasn't good.
Sounded like Tijuana to me.
We went to Chichen Itza. It was great. It was great until we went to that restaurant. That's all I'm going to say.
I am curious.
You got the quesadillas instead of the cicadas, buddy.
I am curious about that sometimes, why people really gravitate to certain places. Draymond loves
was it Cabo, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's on the West Coast. That's on the West Coast, though.
But I just Cabo. I've never asked him about it, but I've always been curious. It's of all the places, you're an NBA player, you can go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a nice place to go to, but I'm always so curious why, when you can go anywhere, that. And maybe we ask him at some point, because it's just always interesting to me why people find their spot.
Where in the off season, does he go back to Michigan, or does he stay out in the Bay?
Nah, he stay in the Bay.
Well, that explains it. It's close. That's why he goes, because it's close. You know, that's why all the East Coast guys go to the Caribbean.
Also, you get the one spot that you know and you trust. Not an experiment. It's like,
and
I
they
know
take care
and
of
I'm
you.
Going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Draymond's about the convenience. I remember I once got on a Southwest flight to Burbank. That famous Oakland to Burbank that everybody loves to take. And then I was shocked to see Draymond in the line. And I was just, wait, you got what? You do this too? You get on a Southwest flight? Like this is how you live as well. But yeah, if it's close, I guess he's with it, even if he is 6'5". But yeah, that's just always interesting to me, is the why that, when you can go anywhere. I think it might say something about someone's personality or what they like in vacation. I know for Lacob, it's Montana, like a lot of billionaires like Montana.
Oh, sure.
That's their thing for whatever
in
reason.
Idaho. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're into that. So always curious about
where
that
do you
stuff.
Go? What's your spot?
We go to Rehoboth in Delaware. It's where we would go if it wasn't sold out. It's crazy. People have bought it up. All of this, 8 weeks out from where we want to go, I can't find anything anywhere in Rehoboth that's worth going to, because, you know, people have been buying it up or you know, renting out for the whole summer, basically. So everybody in D.C. goes to Rehoboth or Lewis or Bethany Beach in Delaware. That's where most people go, or they go to the Jersey Shore. I don't go to the Jersey Shore. I just don't like.
Is that like the Mid-Atlantic version of Martha's Vineyard?
Yeah. But it's way cheaper than Martha's Vineyard, which I've also been to once. But it's great. Don't get me wrong. Martha's Vineyard is terrific, but it is hella expensive. It is not. Now that's where the rich people go in the summertime who live in D.C., like your Congress people and your lobbyists and senators and shit. I went once. I probably won't be going back.
Yeah.
It was really nice, but I just can't do that every summer.
I remember trying to keep pace in a rich guy conversation that I was not qualified to keep pace in when I was in a meeting with Maverick Carter, where this came up, because I think I'd been in Napa the weekend before. And it's like, oh, yeah. He's saying some stuff about Napa. And I go, yeah, man, this seems like every single major city has their little at-a-remove spot to go to, the little vacation spot. And so I brought up one, and then he brought up the other, and then I brought up one, and then he just had more than I had. You know, I had a few. I had the Hamptons in my back pocket. I have Martha's Vineyard. And then I ran out.
Now you had what you saw on TV. Yeah,
I had what I saw on TV. He had where he'd actually been, and he just kept throwing more at me, and I just couldn't keep pace with him.
Yeah, no. Remember, we're adjacent to their world. We're not in their world.
Yeah, on the periphery.
We can look over at their world, but that doesn't mean we're in their world.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Which is a good segue, actually, to, you know, this first round of the playoffs now being over. And as we tape this, our boy KD has just, it's just stunning to me. Like, I know he's a professional athlete. I get it. I get this is what he does for a living, but damn.
He's the only guy, he wins and gets angrier.
Dude just, well, there is that. But I'm talking about on the court. I'm talking about just coming back at 32 after
insane.
You missed a year with an Achilles, and you just like, you're just MVP level again. That just, you just get back to that. That just fascinates me. How, and I know he's got certain advantages, but still, there's been a lot of guys, a lot of guards, a lot of people that weren't big guys that blew out their Achilles, and they were never the same afterwards. And he's just back.
It's ridiculous. And it's enough. I don't want to be too prisoner of the moment, but I sometimes watch him and I wonder if this is the best basketball player I've ever seen. I'm not saying that it's definitive, and at a certain point, they're all so great that it just gets very subjective, and who cares? But in a playoff setting, man, you just can't do anything about him. You really can't. He's so good at the shots you want players to take. That's the thing. He's so good at the shot that you want players to take, and he can make it really out of rhythm, and he's unblockable, and it just breaks any sort of run that you're trying to mount. And I think in a way, maybe as we were monitoring all the various KD drama and everything else that was going on in Golden State, there might have been this weird subplot of him getting so good at basketball that he was just getting almost bored with it. Because it does have that sense when you watch him there right now, and he'll have his off shooting nights, I'm sure, and games where it won't go so great. But
no, he won't.
Maybe not. Sometimes it feels like he beat the video game. That's what it feels like sometimes.
He is a cheat code. Yeah.
Yeah. It's what's so insane is not just like the production. It's how easy it looks.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally looks easy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, and you know, part of it is, you know, Kyrie's a monster and that team is clicking. So you can't really just throw it all at KD.
Right.
And you kind of need to, because he's that good. But man, like, it's unbelievable how if you just play regular D on him, you're toast.
Yeah.
If you just do that half-hearted hand up, you're done. He's going to make it. It's a bucket. It doesn't matter. Like, it's unbelievable. Drew Holiday is a great defender. And I remember Drew Holiday used to be able to give him a little issue, make it work. Man, he made Drew Holiday look like.
He made Giannis look silly, dude. Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy. We just talked about this with Marcus Johnson last week on this show. And Marcus Johnson was telling us that
about the same
the advanced stats said how great a defender PJ Tucker was. Remember that, Marcus, against KD?
Yes. Like
PJ Tucker could get into KD, get under him, he could annoy him. And it was true, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, he's just obliterated.
Yeah. Remember Ethan in the post game after the game, he was, when they won that series, he's talking about like PJ is like, man, that forearm
right.
so strong. He's like, I couldn't do nothing with it.
Yeah.
And now it's like, this dude literally has like, you know, he was unplugged from the Matrix.
Yeah.
Like he discovered himself, and it's crazy. Like, now it's all easy.
He's a
Neo with one hand taking on the agent. Like, all right,
he's a basketball genius, man. He's
crazy.
He's a prodigy, and it is, man. But the thing that's interesting is that Giannis, I thought, did the best job of anybody had ever seen on him regular season wise in those few meetings. And it's small sample size because it wasn't like Giannis was guarding him possession after possession, but he made him look bad.
Yeah, I mean, the crossover pull-up, you know, that's one dribble pull-up that he does.
He didn't even need to cross him over on that one. He had already beaten him. He just did it to do it, it looked like.
And the defensive player of the year that you're just clowning out there.
Oh, my God. It's crazy. At the same time,
you can't let him get it off.
At the same time, it does seem like Giannis, it's good he signed that deal, just because I feel like we would almost be asking questions if he's checked out. Like, that was a weird performance. Yeah. That was very disengaged.
I mean, I think part of that is just when you get rained on, like they got rained on in the first half again.
Yeah.
Like, you spent a day watching film. We're going to do this. Here's how we're going to take this away.
Now. Yeah,
we're ready now. And they come out and they slap you around worse.
And not really like KD and Kyrie. Like, it's Blake Griffin owning you.
Right. Blake Griffin just dunking on your head.
It's Mike James. Like, we don't even know. This is like the third iteration of Mike James.
Right. This is like, I had to actually think when they signed this guy, I was like, wait a minute. That's not old Mike James.
This can't be Mike James, right? This can't be Mike. Who is this?
Mike James about 46 years
old
now.
It's a whole new Mike James out here. Like, they get beat by, it's unbelievable. Like, everybody who steps on the floor. Right. Everybody who steps on the floor is cooking them.
Is killing them. Now, that won't happen in Milwaukee. I get that.
I'm calling this the David Aldridge effect.
I loud talked to him, Ethan. I said they're built to beat Brooklyn.
This is the
they're
team.
Built to
Here
beat
we
them.
Go.
Well, you got,
Katie was listening to you. Like, okay, DA.
Hide behind DiVincenzo. You know, if it wasn't for that injury, if it wasn't for him.
Right, the whole series would be different.
Yeah, we're talking about, they're very top heavy, the Bucks are. They don't have a lot of depth, and you might not think that Mr. DiVincenzo is anything special, but he's the Jenga piece. You pull out that Jenga piece, the tower collapses. You didn't know that.
Man, I can't hide behind that. I got to, when I'm loud wrong, I got to admit it. So far, I am loud wrong about Milwaukee. I thought this was going to be epic. And I mean, so far it has not been.
Maybe go down with the ship, man. Maybe say, "Hey,
don't get caught
in the moment." Okay,
so
Brooklyn.
Hopefully they'll win Game 3, I think, and then the series will be Game 4. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. Although it looks bad,
they can't play much worse. I mean,
no, and they'll play better at home. Everybody
I just don't get what's going on, because I need to rewatch it again. But it seems like Blake Griffin should not be having that easy a time guarding Giannis. Credit to him. And he has strength.
They
and he's
still got Giannis bringing the ball up like he's some kind
of
like.
And they still got Giannis. I mean, I get it, Giannis. You want to show everybody you've worked on your three. And dude, stop shooting the three.
You got to swallow that, man.
The dribbling out the clock at the top of the key.
Yeah.
Like they've got a lead that they're sitting on. Like he's Chris Paul. Like, what?
So it's mystifying. Here's the odd part. Like, on defense, they've got Brook Lopez out there, right? And this is, you know, DA, what have you been saying the whole time? Like, he is.
Give him the ball in the paint.
So it worked first part of game one. And they haven't gone back to a sit. So here he is spotting up outside on the three line. But then on defense, he refuses to get above the 3-point line. On defense, he's dropping back. Like, you can't drop on
Kate. Well, that's their coverage that they play. They've played that coverage since Bud's been there. You
can't do it. You just can't.
I know.
The dudes are good. Kyrie, KD will eat you alive.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Yeah.
So the only reason he's on the court, he should be on the court, they're not even using it.
It is crazy. It is crazy how Brooklyn is just like systematically hunting the mismatch wherever it is, and then just killing them every time they get the
mismatch.
Without Harden. It's crazy.
<Yeah. laughs>
Although I actually do think, and you're not be able to prove this, I actually think it's not that it's a benefit. I'm just saying KD and Kyrie certainly, I think, have more room to operate without Harden out there than they would if he were there.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean they're a better team without him. I'm not saying that. Obviously, they're not.
I think you'll see it in game three. Like, the difference is when those two sit out, I mean, they're still getting cooked by, like, Mike James and them, right? But on the road But on the road in Milwaukee, like, that's the time where it's like, all right, Harden, this is your show.
Yeah.
So we'll see if the second unit, like if Landry Shamet makes everything he throws
Landry
up,
was
right?
flexing too after he dropped them threes in the night, wasn't he?
He's like dunking on dudes in game one, then he's missing game two. It's like unbelievable. So I think you're right. I think the time you'll really see Harden's absence. If Milwaukee decides to show up, right, it'll be when KD and Kyrie sit. And now it's like you got these dudes on the road against Milwaukee. Right. That's their hope right there. If they can't outplay them dudes, then blow the whole thing up, which is what Ethan wanted to do anyway.
I don't know. Okay, so let's. I want to get into that, and then I want to get into ratings because we're now 20 minutes into this taping, and we haven't mentioned any of the other three series.
Well, we talked about Annex. That was top of the mind of the listener,
and there was a reason. There may be a reason for that, but here's the thing. This is what annoys. I shouldn't say annoys me. I think there's a bit of hypocrisy here amongst some of NBA Twitter because what's everybody talking about now? They got to fire Bud. The Mavericks should be looking to fire Carlisle. They need to trade Kristaps. I thought rings culture was a bad thing, and now all of a sudden that's all y'all talking about. They fired Terry Stotts. Damian Lillard's got to demand a trade. I thought y'all didn't care about
Lillard
rings.
Deserves better.
Yeah, right. You got to trade CJ McCollum. Wait a minute. You said rings culture was an anachronism with old idiots like me that always talked about Michael Jordan winning six titles. We're out of date because it's not about the ring. It's about the journey. It's about playing with joy and all that nonsense. What? Make up your minds. What's it about, y'all?
Well, first of all, rings culture is good. That doesn't mean it's smart.
Of course it's good.
It doesn't mean it's smart. Doesn't mean that there's nuance. But we can't have the nuance because then the drama is sucked out of the games. We need an unfair scenario. That's what we need. We need a scenario where the winner is going to be showered in glories and the loser is going to be unfairly mocked and humiliated. That makes it a high stakes event. It's not fair, but you can't have this baseball culture of, oh, this pitcher lost a bunch of games, but look at his ERA, therefore. That's just not what it is. That's not good for the NBA product. I'm not saying that we go crazy with it, but it's not the worst
Otherwise,
thing in the world.
Everybody's Mike Trout, huh? Yeah. Never wins.
Yeah, yeah.
Never hears any criticism.
Yeah, right. We can't have it. That's not good. That doesn't make for a playoffs that's exciting. We can't have a situation where the end of most playoff series are both teams played hard, and I have no opinion about anybody at the end of this whole thing. So that's the thing. I think sometimes that the collective, the NBA intelligentsia, tries to almost outsmart itself, and sometimes it's good to just say, hey, we're going to celebrate the winner, consequences to the loser, and then we calm down a week later and go, I don't know if I really meant it that coach should get fired, right? That was very in the moment. I think that's more or less how it needs to be. And every team should be trying to win a championship. That's the other thing. I think they should all be trying to win a championship.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's,
well, I'm going to disagree with you, but go ahead. Finish your point.
Okay. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that the Blazers settled for being a pretty good team and not taking the risk of breaking up that duo, that backcourt that's probably too small to win a championship. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, but I think optimally you would have wanted them to take that shot and try to win a championship. And that's just how I see it. Some people might disagree, but that's how I see it. And so they should all feel, they should feel that pressure. They should feel that heat. Everybody should be trying to win the ultimate goal. And I don't, that's the NBA I want. That's what I want to see anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Go ahead, Marcus.
The integrity for me of it all is trying to win a championship. Mm-hmm. Understanding everybody won't, but the moment you end up with the ace, right? You end up with the people who are like, yo, like, let's do enough to keep this operation churning.
Right.
And, you know, for me, it limits the integrity of it all. Like, you want to be able to see a team sometimes come out of nowhere and win a championship. It doesn't have to happen all the time, but every now and again, just to show you it's possible.
Just give me a Pistons every once in a while.
Every now and again, right? Like, Dallas, let's come through, right?
Right. Here's why I disagree with y'all, though, because it's not possible. It's not possible for 30 teams to all try to win an NBA championship. Just not, because you never, because number one, 75% of the owners in this league do not want to do what it takes to win a championship, which is go into the luxury tax for multiple years, pay a bunch of luxury tax, and then maybe have to do it again to keep that team together or to replace it, right? Like, we saw it. The Miami Heat had a dynasty. They had a dynasty with LeBron James there. And all they and all LeBron James and Dwayne Wade said is, let's keep Mike Miller another year. And the owner said, no, I'm not doing it. You know, I'm not doing it. I'm not keeping Mike Miller because I'm going to have to pay so much luxury tax to keep him. It's ridiculous. It's not worth doing. And so even teams that win it all don't do it for very long. They just can't keep paying that luxury tax. That's why the Warriors, God bless Joe Lacob, for all of his foibles and flaws, that dude goes into the tax. He pays the tax. He just paid how much for Kelly Oubre this year? How much luxury tax did he pay for Kelly Oubre this year? Whatever it was, you know, I give him credit for that. But most owners aren't going to do that. Just aren't. Here's the problem. They won't admit it. I just want you to admit it. I want, no, not Paul Allen, but his sister now runs the Blazers. Just say, I don't really care if we win a championship. I just want to put a good team out there that makes the playoffs. And every once in a while, if we get hot enough, we can get to a conference final. And yeah, you know what? At least if you did that, then I can make a decision as a person in Portland if I'm willing to pay for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny when they fire Terry Stotts. I mean, like, maybe another coach could have coached that team better, but what was he really working with, right? Right. I mean, it's right. It almost seems like they become a scapegoat oftentimes. Sometimes it's the player, sometimes it's the coach, but there's this scapegoat who gets named and who gets fired, and it's really just a rearrangement of the deck chairs because they did not put forth a roster that was capable of winning a championship. And it is funny, but that's a great point that there is ownership that's just not willing to do what's required. And what's funny about it, as you note, is that nobody ever says that. I almost want right. that to happen. I almost want some guy running a team to go, you know what? Hey, man, this is just a great investment. And I just watch it appreciate in value. It appreciated by 10 times within 10 years. And that's good enough for me. And I hope you like seeing some of these young draft picks play out there. It's a lot of fun, but we really don't care. I really don't care.
Yeah. And they can't, they'll never say it, but I wish they would because it's so obvious that there are limits to even the good teams about what they're willing to spend to keep their team together.
Is there a difference between trying to win a championship and going all out to win a championship?
Oh, yeah. Is that what we're talking about? Definitely. There are degrees.
Yeah. I mean, and it doesn't mean that if you go all out to win a championship that you're doing the right thing because you can overspend on the wrong guys. I mean, that's part of roster management. That's where a GM or a president of player personnel, whatever you want, has to come in and make good decisions in conjunction with ownership. But I just don't think... Like, if I'm a fan, I'm not picking on the Orlando Magic. I'm not. I'm just saying, like, if I'm a season ticket holder of the Orlando Magic.
Condolences, number one.
I just spent the last 3 years of you telling me, hey, we're going to build this team around.
I got a bridge to sell you.
You know what I mean? Around Vucevic and around Aaron Gordon. And we're going to go, and we hired a good coach in Steve Clifford, and we're going to go with this group. And then 2 years later, you go, nah, we're going to start over. We're just going to start over now. How can you make the case to your fan base that you're actually trying to win a championship? That's what I mean. You just can't.
Well, you're not doing it this year, right? But it's like, yo, we're about to start this journey towards
right, championship. Right. But then the coach says, I'm not taking these L's again. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not doing that. Well, you know, so. I don't know.
The Suns are almost instructive that way. And Draymond was saying people were giving him some guff because he said, get my man Devin Booker out of Phoenix a short right. while ago. And then Draymond was saying, you're coming at me for having said that. Now that they're good, but you should be thanking me because look at the pressure we put on them. And look that they did the necessary moves. They did get a veteran that they needed to vault them into contention. And maybe that's a little bit convenient from his perspective, but there is something to that the Suns sure. all of a sudden actually took their young core as it was burgeoning and said, okay, now we add the veterans. Now we combine them. We're going for it. And man, has it worked. It's worked Absolutely. Really well. And that's not something that organization has typically done for a long time. So I'm not saying that it's that easy, but you have to wonder if there are other scenarios where that kind of leap is possible and ownership just isn't willing to make that leap.
Yeah, I think it's more often than not that they're not willing to make that
leap. No question. Way more often, right?
Yeah, way more often, yeah.
Because that's money. Like, that's exactly. literal exactly. overhead. Like, I mean, Chris Paul wasn't $10. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, that was a significant investment. Like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's segue off of that, because I do want to talk about this notion. You mentioned the Suns, and it's a great example, Ethan. You know, that's the team that's the number two seed in the West. You know, they won 50 games this year. They are an exciting team. They got a superstar, a young superstar in Devin Booker. They got an old superstar in Chris Paul. They're well coached. And I wonder what the ratings are going to be if they make the NBA Finals. Yeah. I just wonder what the ratings will be if you got Phoenix in Brooklyn or Phoenix in Philly, let's say, in the NBA Finals, what those numbers are going to be like.
Probably not great. And to my mind, as I was trying to point out, that's a situation that should be mitigated because people react. When the Lakers lose, it's mm-hmm. a bunch of people, especially within the NBA media sphere, saying, oh my God, the numbers are going to be terrible. And then right. there's this counter reaction of nobody should care. I got news for you. The NBA is a TV show, and tens of millions to hundreds
ratings
of millions are on
matter
the line.
On TV, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
People
they're
get
not,
fired.
They're not just on radio.
People get fired like when the NBA doesn't bring home the bacon. ESPN's had hundreds of layoffs with the NBA right. not doing as well as they might have thought. I might know a little thing or two about that. But so this does matter. It has downstream effects. I believe that the play-in tournament was incorporated, A, as a stopgap measure during the pandemic season, and B, because the regular season interest was waning. So it all matters, but it should be mitigated. My contention is that the Lakers losing isn't the problem. The problem is that it's a problem. That's mm-hmm. the issue. They right. need to figure out a way for it not to have this wide discrepancy, and it's a very NBA issue. Any sport you see, you're going to see certain teams and certain markets have a resonance beyond others. But in the NFL, you're talking maybe a 10% swing. In the NBA, I just looked at these new numbers today. I think John Orand of Sports Business Journal said what the Hawks-Sixers game one was ratings-wise. It's 3.388 million on ABC. The Warriors... Rockets game one on ABC in 2019, I just remember this, I believe was 7.26 million. So in the NBA, it's this strange situation where one matchup will give you literally more than twice the audience of a different right. kind of matchup. And right. in that, you just that's a crazy scenario, and
I feel like a compelling duty to combat ratings information with an excuse. So I'm gonna give it to you.
Everybody
does. It was too early.
Yeah,
it was too early.
Let me tell you something. They could have put that on later in the day, and it wasn't sniffing Warriors Rockets.
It's
you know?
Too early. Nah, but the Clippers later that had the 5.4.
Yeah.
For 5.5 million,
yeah. For a game seven, which Warriors Rockets game seven on ABC would be,
it
like,
was probably yeah.
That would be over 10 million if it was on network TV, right?
Yeah,
I mean Warriors Rockets and
especially that game seven.
Oh
man,
yeah,
oh
yeah.
Right. Right.
I think that might have been on cable. Warriors Rockets
was,
game seven in 2018.
Yes, because your host may have covered that for TNT.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so memorable, I guess.
Yeah, I think. I mean, that was a conference finals too. There are all sorts of push pull factors, but the basic. What I'm saying is basically true, that there is a range in the NBA where one matchup can be twice the audience of another matchup. And there are a bunch of issues with that. One is that the fans in the small markets start to get a little paranoid because they're aware of the chatter. They're aware of the talk. You've got Ralph Nader sending letters to the NBA when the Kings lose to the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this stuff, it has a distorting effect. And so I think that it's incumbent on the NBA to find a better way to market these other markets. And Phoenix isn't a small market, by the way. You know, it's a fairly sizable
Atlanta's
city.
Atlanta's not a small market.
Atlanta's the biggest city in the South. And so they just need to find a way. And to me, a lot of it is branding. I think that the media has a role to play. We understand things through narrative. We understand it through story. People reacted to the bubble ratings being way down, like cartoonishly down. You could say it's self-serving, but I think part of that was just having no media around to tell you stories about the players and interesting tidbits. That's how people come to this. So I think, and I know it sounds goofy, sometimes it's as simple as a nickname. Sometimes you need to give a nickname to certain teams just to frame it for people, to tell them this is why you should be interested. You know, what's the deal with this Grizzlies team half decade ago? Well, they really do lunch pail hard work, their grit and grind. You know, that's what their deal is. What's the deal with this Thunder team? Well, they've got these young guys and they're sort of building it up by scratch. We call it Thunder University. Oh, okay. You know, what's the deal with this Warriors team? Oh, it's the Splash Brothers. It's this all-out aerial assault from two guys. We really haven't seen anything
sorry,
like it before.
The branding was strength in numbers, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Get it right. Get it right.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, which one has had more
resonance? That's the one, right? That's the one. Strength in numbers.
Which one has had more resonance over the years? I think it's the Splash Bros. So I think a lot of that comes up organically, but then you have to be enterprising and you've got to message it if you're ABC, if you're ESPN, if you're Turner. And so they've got to find a way to package it, you know, tell us.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
You wrote a column in The Athletic, and it's a good read. It's a very good read about this topic, and you mentioned some of these things that you're talking about now. And I agree with, you know, about half of what you wrote. The part I agree with is definitely, if you go back when I was young, before either of you were born, there was nothing better than how CBS, in the old days when CBS had the NFC, how CBS would do kind of a teaser at the beginning of every game about the matchup you were about to see. And they would talk about, if it was the 49ers, they would talk about Joe Montana has been in so many big moments, it's hard to remember them, but you know he's going to always come through when it matters the most. He's unstoppable. And then the Bears have a lineage that goes back to Dick Butkus in the old days, and now they have this 46 defense that's annihilating everybody. And they did this incredible job when Washington was good. It was about the Hogs and the offensive line and Riggins running through everybody. They set a narrative. They set the tone about what you were about to see is important, yes. And here's why.
Huge.
And I think we don't do, or the networks, TNT and ESPN, do not do as good a job of that now as saying, this is why this game that you're going to devote 2.5 hours to matters.
Yes.
Because this team has this and this team has this. And, they set the tone for the game. They have to do a better job of that. I completely agree with you. But here's where I disagree. I am tired of people saying that it's the NBA's job to make these teams more interesting for people watching at home. It is the fans' job to care about these teams that they're watching. If you want, if you keep telling me, I'm sick of LeBron, I hate LeBron, you guys are always sniffing LeBron's job, blah, blah, blah. I hate Steph Curry and the Splash Brothers, I'm tired of them, blah, blah, blah. All right. Here it is. You have the chance of a lifetime. You wanted to see other teams. You wanted to see different markets. Have at it, big boys. You've got 3 weeks of it now. You've got conference semifinals, conference finals, NBA finals. You vote with your eyeballs. Vote with your whatever, however you determine ratings. Vote with that. Show me that you want what you say you want, which is other teams besides the big stars at the finals. That's what I would say.
They didn't want to get remarried. They just wanted to complain about their spouse. I think that's the
exactly.
I think we need to like include a bit of like history here, right? Like the NBA was unique in its marketing of stars. That's how the NBA became the NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, this is Bird Magic, right? This is Russell Wilt. Even back to Russell Wilt, I was going like the modern era, but Russell Wilt for sure. But it's always been the stars in that sense, and Jordan was the ultimate of stars, right? Jordan was the moneymaker, and since then, you know, like Kobe and LeBron, you know, and Steph, you've gotten these kind of like all-encompassing stars that attract these casual fans. So I do think the shift that you're talking about is necessary. I just think it's difficult. I think what's being asked to do is like not like a quick little fix. It's a reimagining of how you portray the sport. And that's not simple. Like that's difficult. One of the things you talked about, Ethan, was contrast, right? And automatically come to mind is Knicks Pacers, right? Like Knicks versus the Hicks, or even the Cowbell Kings and the Showtime Lakers. So, and even in those contrasts, like it's always a big city involved, right?
Yeah.
But it's a dramatic paradigm shift, and I think what makes it harder is I think these networks take far too many cues from social media.
Yes.
Like that's what we're talking about on social media is the stars. It's like, we're already in, buddy. Like, if we're talking about this on Twitter, you got us.
Right.
Catering to us. There's a whole other market out there. A bunch of people.
The casuals, like my man said.
It's like they don't understand
their
own.
We're in, buddy. Like, we're debating about LeBron and Steph and all this and that because we do this.
Yeah.
We're committed.
Right? Like, that conversation is not as attractive to the people who aren't as familiar.
Yeah,
they're too caught up in social media.
Yeah, they do not understand their own power. They're almost like the head of a table in the boardroom, and we're waiting for them to lead us, and we're all looking to them, and they're just listening to us and saying, well, what do you think? I talk to people sometimes, and they'll go on a TV show, and they'll be shocked at the response and how, oh my God, my book is selling like crazy after I went on that TV show, The Power of TV. It is powerful, and you can set a conversation. There's a lot of noise out there. People are watching all kinds of things, and they've got Netflix, and they've got YouTube and everything else, but a lot of people still watch television, and that's why it's important, as you were saying, DA, to set the template. Tell people, look, this is why you're paying attention. This is why this is a new thing. Have the momentous music. Have the trailer. Present it as this epic fight for all there is, and people will respond to that, and they will buy in. But if you don't allow people some kind of way to frame it, then it's just going to slip through the cracks, and people won't really understand what their reason is for tuning in. So I do think for whatever reason, these networks, and I think I more so criticize ESPN. There's so much I like about Turner still, and I like a lot of the still. The familiarity is part of what I love about it, that I watch Inside and it just doesn't feel that much different from watching it 2 decades ago. And I think that's a very special thing.
It's comforting.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very comforting, and they don't take themselves too seriously. But I just don't know why neither network wants to spend a minute on a little bit of an intro to set the template. I think something like that could be powerful.
To put on the cape for our profession, I think some of this is like It's the lack of journalists. Like like who was telling the stories?
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
It was Bob Costas. You know, it was Marv Albert. What do you like about Inside? It's Ernie. Like, look, there's a art and a skill and an experience to storytelling that I'm sorry you just don't get when you throw an athlete on it. You just don't. Yeah. You don't get it. Like, you can't just throw athletes on everything and expect to get the storytelling. That's great insight. It's a good perspective that we can't provide, but we did bring something to the table.
Yeah. And
some of that is the storytelling. Right. That's what we're talking about. Be able to tell the story.
For one, I don't think most of them bring a great storytelling.
They don't. To it. Oh,
You know what I mean? Like,
it's dicey.
I mean,
Brendan Haywood is like, is growing on me.
Well, it's like the Players Tribune. The Players Tribune comes out and they've got these big ideas about how we hate the media. And I could see it. If I was in their shoes, I would hate us as well. We're poking around their business. We're telling skewed stories.
We get
stories.
It wrong. Come on, let's be honest. We get it wrong
sometimes.
We get a lot wrong. I hate us too.
But the problem is, and they've come out with a thing or two. They've come out with some stuff that's interesting, but for the most part, they don't know what's interesting about themselves, because how could they? We don't really know often what is interesting about ourselves. And sometimes it's people being too reticent and being too humble and not telling you the real interesting stuff. And sometimes it's the other way and they're just blabbing because they think they're fascinating and they're a narcissist. But we are not the best judge of what is interesting to others. How could we be? And that's why you benefit from having other people around who can have their ears perk up and go, oh, that's interesting right there. I keep making the point, because you see a lot of backlash to it and a lot of these press conferences. They're useless. They're stupid. I hate them. Why do we even need them? And I feel that way a lot of times because it's boring to be in a press conference, but it's almost analogous to saying that.
Why do they act like we asked for it? Like, we took a vote.
It's crazy.
It was like, give us a press conference. Like, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there you go.
We'd rather be in the locker room with y'all.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the part I don't get. Like, y'all, it's like, we signed up. Like, we were like, yo, we vote for a press conference.
Yeah, we don't love it either. We don't love it either, but we don't love it any more than somebody loves panning for gold or digging for gold. And it's almost like you're saying, because, hey, 90% of it is just rooting around the dirt. It's a useless exercise. Klay Thompson, so much of what people love about that guy and have found hilarious, you look at all those quotes that people reference, came out of press conferences that he never wanted to do. He never wanted them. He never would have done them unless it was compulsory. So, yeah, the media machine does have some benefits, and there does need to be an interest in all sides and storytelling. But I think part of that is, it needs to be messaged better to the players that this is of benefit to everybody. And just because somebody on TV said something about you that you didn't like, it doesn't negate the whole process. It's a necessary process for the league to grow.
Right. Let me be clear to people that listen to this, all eight of you that listen to this podcast every week. I am all for whatever Naomi Osaka wants to do. What if she doesn't want to do them? Fine. I don't care. It's fine. Good. If that helps her, good. Good for her.
I like that she said it, yo. Like,
yeah, that's fine. I am not in any way saying she should be forced to sit there. What I am saying is that the absence of any interaction between media and athletes makes us theater critics. And that's what people in the theater hate. They hate that. That's what people in Hollywood hate, is that when people like us make judgments about why you do the things you do or say the things that you say, and we don't talk to you because we don't get a chance to talk to you, and we have to kind of guess this is what happens. And back in the 20s and 30s, when sports reporters just sat in the press box and there was no access, there was no locker room access, what happened? People got angry with the media because you said things, and that's not true. Where did you get that from? Well, I had to guess because I never talked to you, Babe Ruth. You know what I mean? Like, so what do you want? Tell me what you want. Ask questions or not?
They want us there.
They want us there, but to only say good things, I think.
This is like 1% of the conversation about media, by the way. Yeah. I think people miss it, right? And let's not even, like, Naomi Osaka is a huge star, and the pressures of that
And it's very way, rare. Tennis is way it different was, than everything
very
else.
Very rare. Yes. But there was a path to where Naomi Osaka was. And people on that path, they love the media. Right? there's a part of your career. I don't care how big you are. There's a part of your career.
It's a great
you
point.
Love the
That's
media.
A great right. point.
At some point, you like you want the coverage, and you're putting the magazine articles on your wall, and you're hoping. I covered high school sports. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to walk in. And it's like you're on with the media, and everybody's excited.
Oh,
there's a
yes,
part
of
this game.
Of course,
there's a part of the game. We're part of the ecosystem of sports, whether people like it or not.
Yeah.
They want their stories told. They want their image put out there, and they want it from people who are not them, because there is a level of credibility that comes when it's somebody else instead of you talking about how great you are, right? Steph right. Curry's never going to get on a mic and say, I'm the best dude. He's never going to do that, right? But he wants somebody else to say it, right? Like
sure.
So they want to act like we're this part of this whole system that they didn't like, but all of them, every one of them, loved us at one point when we were writing about, yo, this dude is next, right?
Like,
so I get it. You get to the top and we irritate. I understand that. That's all right. Part of the game. But listen, there's somebody behind them who's like, yo, that's I right. would like that that's coverage.
Right. And I get it. If you're job. At her level or you're at LeBron's yeah, you, level,
that's a
I
whole
get it. You don't need
absolutely.
Us. I get
you don't
it.
Need us. Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
I get it. You can tell your own story through
no
your
question.
Own media company.
And you
I get
should.
It. Like,
and you should. Yeah.
But the problem.
Mind, there's a dude at the back of the bitch.
Right. Mike James.
The new Mike James. I want to write about the new Mike James.
Well, but part of the problem is that you'll see these stars who aspire to that status, and they'll take their lead from those absolute superstars who don't need it. And they'll think they're them, but they're not
yeah.
them. And the league doesn't benefit from a bunch of people thinking they're them. I remember watching Anthony Davis on The Shop talking with LeBron. And he was talking about how LeBron had gotten to see himself as his own business, his own corporation. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that. I was thinking, yeah, that's true of LeBron. I don't know if that's necessarily true of Anthony Davis. And
right.
beyond that, I don't know if the league wants – like 20 or 30 guys thinking like that, because it's
right.
not sustainable. There's one LeBron James, and he can go anywhere, and everybody will be interested in wherever he is, but that's not true for everybody else. And so
sure.
it is a tricky situation. It's only going to get trickier, I think, as we see more people in Naomi Osaka's age cohort who are Gen Z and have grown up completely marinated in the social media environment that I don't think is good for your mental health if you're a standard college student, let alone somebody whose fame is scaled up to an insane
right.
degree. So I think we're going to see more of this going forward. It's going to be very difficult for the relationships to get managed. But,
here's a question for you, Ethan. What's the media role in improving these ratings?
Ooh, are we on the take? Well, we're not working for a broadcaster, so theoretically we're absolved. You know, it's good. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I think we benefit if the NBA does better, but I don't think we specifically have such a role. Maybe you would put that more on ESPN, more on Turner Bleacher Report. I think the goal is to find interesting stories. I think the goal is to tell you why something you didn't know about is of interest. I remember with Michael Lewis, somebody asked him, how do you always just hit on the hot thing? You know, the thing everyone's going to be talking about. And he said, look, these stories I tell, they weren't obviously interesting. I was just interested in it. And then it created its own momentum. Nobody was saying, hey, you know what the next hot thing is? It's the Oakland A's and analytics. That's going to be huge. That's going to be big time.
The same Michael Lewis, by the way, who looked at us and said, man, what you guys do is great.
Yeah, and I remember Marcus and I, that was at a Warriors practice, and Marcus and I looked at each other and thought, man, I think Michael Lewis's job is a little better than our job.
Right.
Just a little bit. But I think it's really the game of it is to find interesting stuff, find stuff that's going to connect, find ways to frame what happened. And sometimes it's to reduce it down. It's really impressive what some people can do in understanding the strategic back and forth between two teams, and statistically as well. But ultimately you're going to have to take your advanced understanding and repackage it in a way that is broadly understandable, well, often in metaphor.
Yeah. Casual viewers, right? Yeah. I mean, all due respect, casual viewers don't care about true shooting percentage. I'm sorry.
They don't.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like back in the, you know, in the Bulls day, you couldn't take your eyes off Michael Jordan. I don't know what else to tell you. You just couldn't take your eyes off the guy, you know? Yeah. So,
but you could tell a story about what Brooklyn did to wall off Giannis and why he failed. You know, you can tell that is a story
or what
that
Giannis is up against. Like, just feel.
But
like
you could also tell a story about Giannis Antetokounmpo being, you know, sui generis. In terms of, this is the first, well, I shouldn't say the first. He's not the first because others have come, Mutombo and some other guys, but this is a guy, an African descent player who grew up in Greece, who was on the streets basically, comes to the United States and becomes the best player in the league. I mean, can you not tell that story again? Like, that's a really good story. Like, that's a great story. Like, that's worth telling over and over again. I mean, it's like everybody gravitates to Marvel origin stories, right? Like, you love those things, right? So, to me, it's like, that's part of our job is like, there will be people watching Brooklyn or Milwaukee for the first time, I have no idea where this guy's from. I don't think you can ever tell his story enough. It's a good story. Like, it's a great story, actually.
I think
about perseverance and family and all of those things.
I've got some pushback on that. I think that's an awesome story, and it's something that I would love to read in a Mirren Fader book about Giannis. But I do think that Nike screwed
up. She's writing a book.
She's coming, right?
Yeah. But I do think that Nike screwed up the marketing of Giannis, and he's an interesting one to isolate on because he's the back-to-back MVP. And last season in the bubble, they put a few of his playoff games at 11 a.m. on the West Coast on a weekday. And that was a concession that this is not working. People are not tuning in for this guy in the United States, even on the level that they would tune in for a Zion Williamson, who we haven't even really seen in the playoffs.
Right,
and
but
he got
hyped all to the ends of the earth when he was at Duke. I mean, there's a reason.
I agree. That's just one comparison point. I would say that the Nike campaign that was built around the story you're talking about, which is a great story, is not necessarily what is resonant to casual fans tuning in to watch him. They're tuning in to watch him because he does things that nobody else can do, and they want to think that he's likable and cool and charming. And the ad campaign was heavy. I know a guy who was involved in the ad campaign. He thought they were making a mistake with it. He thought that the overeducated people who were working on the campaign found it to be so important that he had made this journey, and they were placing the importance, or they were so focused on doing what was important that they forgot about what was resonant and what was effective. I think that they should have more so marketed him, and this is different from maybe what the media should do and the media should talk about, but I'm talking about Nike, which also has a role to play here. They should have marketed the hell out of how this guy does things nobody else can do and is just charismatic and entertaining as hell. And some of the ads that you've seen for these kind of random products in other countries, you can see that side of Giannis. It seems like they should have told that story on that level. And maybe on our level, we tell that story that you're talking about right there. But it's just a tricky thing of how to make a guy really break through and resonate to tens of millions of people. It's not easy, and it's easier to Monday morning quarterback it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm fascinated. I'm going to be fascinated to see if it's not. Look, if it's Brooklyn Clippers or Philly Clippers, they'll be fine. The ratings will be fine, and they'll be maybe a little off from norms, but they won't plummet. But if it's Milwaukee, Utah, I mean, you have to have an answer because that's not going to generate high ratings. And it has nothing to do with the quality of the players or the teams or anything like that. Well, it's just that they're not household names yet.
They've got to build the next generation. And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I wonder how, like, maybe we don't even see the fruits of this year.
Right.
Yeah. Until later. You know, these are seeds. Like, maybe right. These are seeds. You're learning, you're building a Trae Young. Absolutely. Yeah. So yes. we might see, maybe Trae Young becomes a thing now.
Yeah. I just talked to somebody with the Hawks and they texted me, a star is born. And yeah. I think that's what it feels like with Trae Young, to what Marcus is saying. I like the way Marcus is thinking about it. Like, this could be a bad number, but it's really about the long term. And it's how are they going to cultivate it? How are they going to water it? How are they going to properly care for these growing seeds right now for what's going to be in the future? Because Steph and LeBron aren't going to be around forever. The entire league can't depend on what they do. So that's really what our conversation is about, is how is the league going to properly tell these stories and frame what these guys do? And it's difficult. I mean, sometimes you'll see great players, and if there's no story attached to it of this is why you should watch, this is what differentiates it. You know, LeBron had a story. He was out of Akron, and he was in Northeast Ohio, and he was the hometown kid. And that was part of the LeBron story, in addition to his greatness, that drove a lot of interest before him jilting that area, drove a lot of interest before him returning to that area.
He was like 15 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Returning to that area drove a lot of interest. You know, you gotta really attach a story to Ja Morant, because Ja Morant is incredible.
It's a great story.
He looks like Derrick Rose 2.0, but it's not like the people giving you the games are really telling you, hey, this is why you should watch this guy. This is this guy's story. And so that's what's necessary. They got to start doing that with this next generation.
Right. Right. All right. Well, we'll get out on that, because you know, I know ratings is not what everybody cares about, but I think it's fascinating because this is such a unique situation. You're going to have someone win a championship who hasn't won one since at least 1983. Yeah. And that's unbelievable to me.
I'll do a quick little pushback on that too, and maybe it'll sound a little arrogant, but I see sometimes on NBA Twitter, they'll mount the argument that nobody cares about ratings, blah, 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 blah. And I sometimes think to myself, somebody tell my readership numbers.
Yeah, like, I mean, people, you know? I think you're right. I think people do care. But I think explaining that a 5 or a 3 in this context is not the worst number in the world, or a 5 or a 3 is really bad and here's why. That's what we need to make sure.
Ironically,
we focus on.
It's like the same thing, right? Where it's your job. You have to contextualize it, just like contextualizing the stars that drive the ratings. You have to contextualize what the numbers mean, because otherwise, it's just a sea of data
and easily spun and easily interpreted by whoever wants to interpret them for whatever reason they want to interpret them, right?
Oh, so, yeah. And it's going to be more so now, because the website that chronicles the ratings, ShowBuzz, is just down forever. So now it's just going to be a big, you know, you're going to see the broadcasters strategically leak things and hide other things. So all going to be a big PR battle. So, you know, we have that to look forward to.
Sounds riveting, sir.
Yeah,
riveting. Well,
our man will
me
be
personally
on
I'm going with the small town ratings people. I don't want the big city ratings people. I'm with the Hicks of the ratings people.
You want Utah and Milwaukee and
I'm with them. Give me the Jazz.
I like it.
Well, I already picked the Suns to go to the finals. So Phoenix and Brooklyn. There you go. Phoenix. I don't know how Brooklyn's a small.
You know, it would be a fun one that would be bad ratings, but wouldn't Suns Hawks be kind of a fun finals?
Be a great finals. It'd be fun as hell. It'd be fun. Yeah. Every game would be 150 to 148. It would be awesome.
It'd be great. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
It would be great.
This is going to be fascinating. So you'll be on it, Ethan Strauss, our man. Thank you, as always, for joining us, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time. And appreciate y'all listening on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you are listening to this fine, fine broadcast. And as always, leave that 5-star review. And if it's less than 5 stars, damn, man, keep it to yourself. Later.